How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling, and this is one of our stupid questions segments where one of us asks the other person a question. They have to answer off the top of their head, and this time it'll be me asking the question to Leonard. So, Leonard, what is the perfect number of pay-per-views per year for a wrestling company? Should there be one pay-per-view a month, or do you prefer it being fewer?
I prefer it being fewer. However, the way that storytelling is now and today and has been since about the mid-90s was we've gone from longer storytelling to shorter storytelling. So the cycle is that one a month pay-per-view. You know, I mentioned how I do a long-term fantasy booking league, and I do monthly pay-per-views as well. I try to tell longer stories over the course of the pay-per-views. It wouldn't be unlike me to have the same matchup 3 or 4 months in a row with different stipulations or someone else thrown in or something of that nature. You know, back in the day when WWE just had the big four, you know, that seemed good for the type of storytelling they were doing.
Right.
So I think it has everything to do with the type of storytelling that you're telling, your story cycles, your narrative cycle. The current narrative cycle is a month. Me, I would be good with maybe once a quarter. So that would be 4 year where you're building your storyline through those 3 months to the big payoff and then resetting and building again. Although I was a big fan of WWF's In Your House model, where they had the four big pay-per-views. They had the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. And then every month, they sprinkled in the In Your Houses, which were shorter and was more about being part of the storyline progression to the next big show.
Right.
Or even just trying to do something different or unique with a type of matchup. So my ideal, I'll say this, would probably be the big four with maybe a special In Your House style shorter show in between. Maybe even something where you're highlighting maybe like if the WWE would have like an all tag show or an all women show or, you know, right. Maybe a show like when they go out and they did a show at the show they did at the castle in Ireland or something where it's a little
Clash
different
of the
Clash of the Castle, where you're doing something a little bit different.
Right.
I think that would be the ideal for me. So your opinion on that, are you a monthly guy or are you like a bigger time frame?
Well, you know, I mean, I think a lot of it also depends, like what you said was correct in, you know, how storylines are told these days versus how they were told in the 80s and early 90s. I also think it's about like how hot the territory or the program or the company is, you know, like in the mid to late 90s when Stone Cold and The Rock were on top, you know, you wanted to see them in big matches every month, you know, that was fun, you know, like, so the every month thing worked and, you know, the lower card, you know, had its hits and misses, but, you know, those were good. Nowadays, you know, I prefer fewer. I think that WWE has too many, in my opinion, because they sometimes have more than one a month. And I think it is a little bit too much. You know, customary to, you know, waving the AEW flag, they do have fewer pay-per-views per year. And so as a result, because they're asking you to pay for them, and they don't have a network, it does mean a little bit more when there's fewer per year. That looks like it might be changing a tad, you know, because of the All In at Wembley Stadium that they have coming up. That hasn't been announced as a pay-per-view just yet. So the rumor is it might be airing on Max, HBO Max, who knows. But, you know, I like they focus on having, they'll have special shows on TV from time to time in addition to their weekly shows. And then they'll have the pay-per-view. It's basically like one a quarter, which is a little bit bigger. So I guess I prefer that, but I'm game for either one. Like nowadays, I think they need to kind of spread it out more and have fewer pay-per-views. But if you're telling your story well, and you have enough talent to buy, have them tune in once a month, then by all means, I understand doing that too.
And when you mentioned the AEW doing special shows on live TV, that made me remember Clash of the Champions that WCW did. I loved Clash of the Champions. I thought Clash of the Champions were fantastic.
Yeah.
Because you weren't necessarily blowing your big feud sometimes and all the time, but you would have title matches. You would have interesting matches. It was kind of a step between the pay-per-view and the weekly regular television show. I mean, you got some all-time classics in Clash of Champions, Sting versus Flair from the first one, and the 2 out of 3 falls between Flair and Steamboat. So, you know, I guess if I can revamp my answer, I think I would probably like something closer to what WCW was doing in the late 80s, early 90s,
right,
with their pay-per-views. They were starting to up their pay-per-view game a little bit, but with those Clash of the Champions. So maybe, again, I'm not an AEW fan. I don't watch the current product, but maybe what AEW is doing just with that type of cycle would be probably what I would like.
Yeah, and I think that AEW's nod to Clash of the Champions is their Battle of the Belts series, mm-hmm. Which I don't know if they're going to continue to do that as much now that they have their show on Saturday, Collision. But yeah, certainly that's the way it started, you know, because all the matches were title fights. So, just that was one that I had for a while in the can. I thought that was interesting because right now you have two different major companies who are doing it in two different ways.
I'm going to ask you a question that I know you can't answer.
Okay.
What does Impact do?
I know they still have pay-per-views.
I know, but I don't know what their cycle
is. Yeah, no, I don't know what their cycle is. I know they still run. I mean, I want to say it's one a month, like because like, but you know, we often lose track of them, right? Right. So, because I know I think they're heading towards Slammiversary.
Something like that. I would actually, you know, I don't have cable. I don't even know what channel Impact is on anymore, but I would actually like to watch it because occasionally I do read the TV tapings, you know, how they went and who right. won, and they've got some interesting guys like, you know, Shelley and Saban are on top there, and Aldis is there,
and your boy Nick Aldis is there.
Yes, I love Nick Aldis,
we talked about that in the past when he left NWA. Mm-hmm. We had talked about where he would go and, you know, what would be the right choice, and, you know, you thought WWE. You know, I don't know, at the time I might have leaned towards AEW, but they had so much talent. I don't think I was even totally in that ballpark.
Yeah.
He's at Impact now, and I'll say this: if he's happy there, you know,
yeah.
his wife is there, so obviously that's sure. part of it. But
and the women's division interests me because it's a lot of names I don't know. So I like the idea that they're building a fresh women's division, and I would actually. And I've heard good things about the booking. Scott D'Amore is the booker, and I've heard good things about the booking. And so I would be interested in watching Impact if I could find it to watch on a regular basis, which might be the problem.
I think that he could – I think he's better than Impact, but if he's happy there.
Yeah. Well, you gotta start somewhere.
That's true.
Who knows where he might be in the next 5 years?
Right. But yeah, no, that's a funny question though. But yeah, they obviously still do pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. But yeah, who knows what their cycle is altogether. And don't even ask about NWA Power because they do shows. I don't know how
long. Yeah. We talked about, I was watching NWA Power. I got out of it. Tyrus does nothing for me.
I was just about to say, you're not a Tyrus fan.
Not a Tyrus fan. I was more interested in Trevor Murdoch.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's true. He's very underrated, and but you know, all these companies, as the man said on Twitter, would be number one in the whole world if they just signed the big guy Ryback.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That just goes without saying.
Yeah. Anywho, so let us know what you think about the different companies and their pay per view schedule. Do you prefer a lot or do you prefer fewer? Because I'm sure everybody has a different opinion on that.
You know, if someone had Ryback, they could do weekly pay-per-views easily.
Yeah, that's probably true. Back when, you know, NWA TNA was doing, you know.
Yes, because they couldn't get a TV deal anywhere else. Right. And those were, like, I think very short shows. Like, I don't know if they were approximately an hour, and they were very cheap.
I think it was like 1 to 2 hours at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and if that was, I think they were maybe around $10 or even under $10. So, you know, if that's, that got them through the early part of creation. So I don't think that's a viable model for most companies to do.
No, yeah, they were getting
started. They did it to get started, and it worked at the start.
I had thought about at the time buying one or two of them, but I never knew which ones to buy. You know, would I be getting one that was worth my money? Mm-hmm. Would I not? You know, because some of them were genuine, just not throwaways, but they were building like an old territory would. They would be building to a bigger show.
Yeah, week to week. If you have Pluto TV, there's a TNA channel, part of their sports line. Okay. And they do from time to time show the old weekly pay-per-views.
Oh, that's
they cool. Show, yeah, they don't seem to show things in order. They just seem to kind of bounce around. They'll show current stuff and old stuff. And sometimes I'll just see what's on and wind up watching a random pay-per-view or a random episode of Impact from, you know, 08 or wherever. But that channel is if you want to get the old Impact, is a good thing if you just want to, like, check out some random stuff. They used to.
Or you could check out their app, which is not good at all. But
I would guess that the channel is derived from the app, but probably a little bit better, a little Pluto'd up.
Right. All right. So yeah, let us know your thoughts, what you prefer. How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling, and this is another edition of our Stupid Question series, where one of us asks the other a question, and they have to answer right off the top of their head with no preparation. And once again, it is my turn to ask Leonard the question. And this is a bit of a two-parter. So we'll start off with the first part, which is, Leonard, what moves do you think should be outlawed?
Probably any move that has shown to really be problematic as far as causing injury. Right. I know things that have over, like the vertebraker, I know is banned, at least in WWE, the type of certain types of pile drivers, like the tombstone pile driver is very, very safe to take. But other types of the sit down pile drivers, I know some people are against the Canadian destroyer. But the quick answer would be, if you can show that a certain move has a track record of causing injury, no matter who does it or who is taking it, then I would say that would be a candidate, because anybody can get injured off of any move at any time.
Right.
And those things happen. But if it's something like, say, I believe where they did have a lot of people getting injured off the vertebraker, whether it was a severe injury or a neck stinger or something like that, then it would be like, yeah, don't do that. And I don't think that there's any move that exists that if you didn't do it, like, well, that's the end of wrestling. We can't do vertebrakers anymore. Well, just, you know, turn off the lights. It's over. We can't do that move. It's over. Yeah. Although I can see a lot of AEW guys do. I can't put a guy through a table. Well, I might as well just leave. You know, but
the vertebraker, though, was like, you know, a really gruesome looking move to begin with. Yeah. And, you know, I want to say Hangman Adam Page has, I think it's called the Dead Eye, and it's not the vertebraker exactly, but it is like a pile driver from the back, which, you know, hit, like I said, his, like when Shane Helms used to put that thing on, like,
yes,
looked like any wrong move could go bad. When Hangman Page does it, it's not quite the same. But
I'm not familiar with the Deadeye. Is it similar to Eli Drake's gravy train?
Probably. I can't picture that right off top.
Because that's more of he's got the guy slung on his back, but they're taking it more on, as he's not dropping him straight on his head, but more on the upper back and shoulder area.
Kind of, but like, yeah, this is more on the head.
More on the head. Okay. So yeah, so something like the gravy train, I am good with, because that is him dropping someone more of on their back, their upper back than the head. And again, it all depends on who's performing the move. There are guys that you would, of course, totally trust. When we mentioned, I'm okay with the Tombstone Piledriver, Kane and Undertaker are super safe workers.
And those are the two that were mainly the ones that were allowed to do that move.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone I've ever heard, you know, Steve Austin being one, that he felt so safe in the ring with those guys. And that was perfectly fine to do that. And I would see that there are probably guys that other people would be like, no, I don't want to take that move from that guy. I would take a tombstone from Undertaker. I wouldn't take a tombstone from, you know, whoever over here, because of
how no tombstones from the Blue Meanie.
Yes, from the Blue Meanie.
No tombstones from him.
Oh, okay. So back to you then. Is there any moves that you think should be banned?
Well, I'm along the same line of thinking as far as moves that have proven to be problematic. One move that I like, that for a while it was outlawed everywhere, aside from Japan maybe and Mexico, and that has now really become more of not a mainstay, but you see it more often, which is the reverse Hurricane Rana. You do see that more often these days. It's like, especially AEW, but I've seen it in WWE recently as well. If you can take that the right way, then cool. You know, one move that's fairly recent that caused some controversy, but he still does it, is Seth Rollins' buckle bomb.
Yes.
I got to say, part of me has a face twitch every time I see him do it, because if he doesn't throw that person at the right angle, they're going to land right on the back of their neck. And you know, now, like, he tries to get closer to the turnbuckle and it's like more in the top of the back that they land. So obviously, like, he made adjustments after some of the issues with Sting and I forget who else,
that always surprised me that Rollins has injured several people, but he doesn't get the injury tag that a lot of other guys get.
Right.
I don't know if it's because he's so popular or people, you know. Oh, well, he's fine. But anyone else, like, I remember, like, people didn't like Nia Jax. Nia Jax would blink. And it was like, well, she injured that woman. She blinked wrong. Get rid of her. Gone. Yeah. But, you know, Seth Rollins is, you know, paralyzing Sting, which he didn't do. But, you know, ended his WWE run, and is injuring people. And he always seems to get a pass. I'm not saying he's an unsafe worker.
Right.
But it reminds me of when Jim Cornette does his Dusty Rhodes impression. Forget who he said it on, but Rhodes was booking somewhere, I think it was Florida, and some guys did something in a ring and they totally messed it up. And I won't do a Rhodes impression, but he said, don't do shit you don't know how to do.
Right.
And I think that's the number one thing is, you know, if you don't know how to do this move, if you're not practiced in it, if you're not skilled in it, and again, I'm not necessarily saying Rollins isn't, but, you know, don't do it if you're not sure of yourself on it.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys weigh a lot. So, if you can't throw them accurately, then it shouldn't be a part of your repertoire.
If you're not comfortable doing it, if you're not the guy comfortable taking it. I mean, Steve Austin talked about he was not comfortable taking that power driver from Owen Hart. He felt it in his bones going into that match. I shouldn't do this.
Which he doesn't know what he's doing. Don't land on your ass.
Yeah, yeah. But, oh, it's Owen Hart. He's a Hart. Yeah, okay, he's got this. And if Austin had just said, no, you know, let's not do that. I'm not comfortable doing the power driver. You know, let's do something else. I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to take it tonight. And I think Owen probably would have been like, oh, okay. Sure, we'll do something else.
Right.
I think, you know, if he would have just said that, then I don't know. You know, it could totally change, because his entire you know, how he wrestled a match changed after that. He went from being a really good wrestler to being a more of a brawler, and then that became more of the style, the Attitude Era. And right. it'd be interesting to see how things would have changed. You know, in my long-term fantasy league that I talk about, I have Steve Austin. I have stunning Steve Austin. That's how I'm using him. He's feuding with Eddie Guerrero right now. So
you get to choose which version?
Yes, yes. Okay. So if you have in anybody, you can – usually it's considered in their prime, but you can write a person a certain way. And actually what I do on my roster is I kind of put the year next to the name as how I'm thinking of them in my head.
Okay.
So, you know, for Austin, I'm using like 90, 95 Austin, like before he jumped to WWE Austin is how I'm thinking of it in my head.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, though, about people getting in the injury tag and other people not. Like, you know, I feel like in the early to mid 90s, like because when the click was, you know, all powerful, like if a guy did a move wrong to one of them, like they were like excommunicated. It felt like, you know, like
yeah.
one guy that was always labeled with the injury tag, and he might have injured more than one guy, I don't know, was Mabel / Big Daddy V Viscera.
That was the first person I said of when you said click, because I know that I've seen Kevin Nash just rag on Mabel, not just for injuring him, but I know he injured Rikishi at one point, because Nash's yeah. comment was, if you injure a Samoan, you're doing something wrong. Because they're like tanks.
That's funny. Not it's yeah. not funny, but it's
yeah,
it's true though. But yeah, some guys, like, I think a lot of it also involves politics backstage to a point. Like, some people, if they're unsafe, they're unsafe. That's all there is to it. You know, so, but other guys, when they injure people, you'll hear, you know, defenders be like, oh, well, accidents happen, or oh, it's not ballet. Okay. Yeah. You know, so anyway, the other part of this stupid question was, what moves would you like to see more of? What moves do you think are not around enough?
I've always said that Rusev should do a heart punch. Nobody does a heart punch anymore.
Not as his finisher, though. Maybe as a setup to a finish.
A setup. Not a finisher, but like a setup, because it's a stunning move. You can right, stun a guy. Like,
Reigns has that Superman punch thing, and, you know, if he has that, then, you know, which is, it's sometimes it's used as his finish, but
yes. Yeah. So I miss the heart punch. I always like the heart punch.
Ivan Putski's, you know,
Polish hammer.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, there's one that I think could be used more often.
Yes.
Double axe handles in general.
Yes. A really big guy, I think, could really get over the Polish hammer. Hogan's axe bomber, yeah. like the sort of the high angle lariat type yeah. of thing yeah. in Japan all the time. That could definitely get over, because, you know, so many dudes, you know, use a clothesline, but I think that, you know, again, the right guy could get that over. I miss old school, submission holds, like an abdominal stretch.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there could be some submission holds brought back.
Yeah. I always marked out when Triple H would bust out the Indian Deathlock.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that always showed that he had his boots on that night, his working boots on. He's like, I really want this match to be cool. I'm going to bust out the Indian Deathlock.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed that. You know what you never see anymore? Backslide. No one ever wins a match with a backslide.
That's true, yeah.
Terry Von Erich won the NWA World Heavyweight title with a backslide on Ric Flair. I want a guy who just wins. If Orange Cassidy can wrestle matches with his hands in his pocket, I want a guy whose only move is the backslide.
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned the backslide. In terms of different pinning combinations like that, one guy that I see use it quite regularly in his matches is Bryan Danielson.
I do. I do remember seeing him use a backslide. Yes.
Other guys, you don't see it nearly as much, but he, you know, he has that kind of old school flavor to him. As
mm-hmm. well. Yeah. So I think most of the things that we're saying here are old school moves that you just don't see right. anymore. that I think because they have fallen out of use, that if you brought them back and the right person brought them back, that I think you could get them over. Like how Cesaro did the big swing.
Oh,
and
people
mark out for that. And you know, no one did a big swing for, you know, decades.
Long time, right.
Leading up to him doing it, you know, the airplane spin. That's another one that you never see.
That's true.
Anybody, because you know what you could do, because the way you got a guy up, you could do an airplane spin into like an attitude adjustment or an F5, or you could use that as a setup for another move where you have a guy up on your shoulders like that.
Brock Lesnar could do like an F10.
Yes. Like if he did an airplane spin into the F5, that would be over. I think people would lose their mind.
Probably kill the guy.
Yes. I think people would lose their minds over that, though. But yeah, I think because here's the thing, like so many people today are trying to go forward. Like,
yeah,
how can I do something even more dangerous or more crazy or more, you know, contrived or more, it requires more setup. Where if you go back and you grab something that hasn't been used in decades and you modernize it, I think that's a smart plan.
Yeah. And like, you know, for a while you would see some of the high flyers they would do, you know, it would be a 360, you know, would be the big one. And then it became, oh, who can do a 450, you know? And now you have AAA champion El Hijo del Vikingo. He does a spot where he does the next one up from that, which is what, a 620, 630, whatever it is.
Something like that. Doesn't Pac do something similar?
It's just like
a million revolutions.
It's crazy. Like the people who watch AEW, because he's been on there a few times, will know what I'm talking about. I mean, it's just crazy. But
you know, here's a move I've never seen, and I want it: a shooting star back rake.
Shooting star back rake.
Yeah. So you do the revolutions, but you just come down with like behind the guy with the back rake.
I would love to see that. And you know, as we were talking, thinking about like some of the old school guys like Luthez or whatever, like just can you imagine seeing back in like the 50s Luthez, you know, breaking out a lion salt out of nowhere? Come on.
Here's the thing too, like, you know, talk about the long-term fantasy league thing that I do. You know, I have older guys. And if I think, like, for example, I have Randy Savage. Could Randy Savage do a moonsault? Yeah, back in the 80s, totally. Could Randy Savage do a lion salt? Totally.
Right.
I you know, and if it's a move that I think a guy could do, even if he's an older guy,
right,
I will sometimes incorporate that into, you know, the match when I'm writing out matches.
Right.
So you know, and I think that would be amazing if you could teleport. You know, a guy like Luthez. Is Luthez doing lion salts? No, but I could definitely see Luthez working maybe more of an MMA style.
Right.
You know? Something like that.
Anya belts out an F5.
Yeah. Why not? I think a lot of those classic dudes, I think, could adapt to today's wrestling. Not all the high-flying stuff, but... Right. Some of the newer moves, I think they could.
Yeah,
they
you wouldn't see them doing corkscrew moonsaults.
No. Nick Bockwinkle's not doing a corkscrew moonsault.
Yeah, no. But you could probably see some of those guys doing like a stunner or something like that.
Yeah, something new, or you know, a power bomb, or right. You know, in any types of the, you know, the F5 that we talked about. Things like that you could definitely see,
right.
and probably those older guys going, oh, that's a cool idea. You know, it wasn't quite what they did, but
right.
To wrap it up, that's an interesting question. And I think our answer has been go back, look at some old moves and bring them forward.
Yeah, I mean, use the libraries of footage that are out there, and yeah. You know, Triple H was always a school of that kind of stuff. Like, he would go back.
Yeah, I know he watches a lot of tape. If I was a wrestler in the WWE, I don't know where they keep the tape library, but I would go there all the time and just say, you know, give me this, give me that, and go watch it for ideas. I would totally do that.
Jimmy the Swordfish.
Jimmy, as I'm wrestling as Jimmy the Swordfish in WWE.
That's a throwback to early episodes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let us know what you think. What moves you think should be gone? What moves you think should be around more often? How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me is Leonard. And this is a show about wrestling. And this week we are going to be doing another round of stupid questions. And for those who have not checked out this segment before, basically, one of us asks the other person a random wrestling question, and they have to answer off the top of their head. There is no preparation. This time, it is Leonard's turn to ask me a question. So, Leonard, take it away.
You know, sometimes in other sports fans, they'll discuss things like, how cool would it be to, say, catch a pass off of Tom Brady or to try to hit a pitch off of Nolan Ryan? So my question to you is, what wrestling move would you want to take and from what wrestler? Wow. To say that I took a whatever. For example, I'll give you our good friend, the show, Dan Weber, has a picture of himself taking the cross-faced chicken wing from Bob Backlund.
Wow, that's amazing. How did that feel? Do you know?
I don't remember what he said. It was at a show in New Jersey where Backlund was signing. And, of course, Dan and me, we go with our buddy Ron. We're behind the scenes a lot. And I guess Dan was I think it was after the show, and he was talking with Bob and just say, hey, would you do this? And he said, sure. And they got the picture.
Well, I'm going to do something different than Dan. I don't know that I would choose a submission because I'll tell you why, because I'm sure Backlund was professional and, you know, very nice guy. And everything I've heard about him is that he's a nice guy. However, there are probably some guys out there that if you ask them to put a submission on you, they are going to do it, and they're going to do it for real. Like, I've heard so many horror stories about people trying out for wrestling for the first time and, you know, whatever. So I personally wouldn't choose a submission. The first one that came to the top of my head when you said this was the F5.
Really?
Yeah, I think it would be great. I don't know why, to take an F5. You know, it might hurt, but I think it would be fun to take an F5 for sure. And, you know, as popular as it is right now, like, you see more and more, no matter what the promotion, you know, chops are becoming, you know, a thing of their own. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'd want to take chops from somebody. I don't know that there's probably a short list of people that I could select for that, but
what about Ric Flair? Today.
Sure, why not? If this were 20 years ago, absolutely. I would have, you know, like, yeah. He'd be one of the best. What is his name? Dax from
Dax Harwood.
From FTR.
Yeah.
He gives some hellish chops. And there's a few guys from Japan that do as well. And, like, they obviously really lay them in. So those are the two that come to the top of my head. There's a lot of moves, I think, that, you know, it would be interesting to see. Like, for instance, like, when I say submissions, like, I'm not going to tell Kurt Angle to put me in an ankle lock. Like, I'm just not going to do that. And I'm not going to tell Brock Lesnar to give me an arm bar or Ronda Rousey. Like, because I don't trust either of them to not, like, hurt me permanently.
See, that's why, because I thought, you know, with a submission hold, it only hurts if they apply pressure.
Correct.
But would you trust them not to apply pressure? Because I was thinking, even still to this day, it would be cool to take a figure four from Ric Flair or a sharpshooter from Bret Hart.
Sharpshooter, maybe. Like, the figure four, I don't know if anybody ever, just as a joke or wrestling with friends, whatever, has put on a figure four. That hurts.
Okay. I have not had one. So, but you mentioned chops. Dan Weber got to chop the Barbarian once. I don't know.
I remember you telling me this story. Yeah. And his hand was story. Like shaking, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We were driving home like an hour later and he still had like a tremble in his hand. He said it was like chopping a tree with your hand.
That's the thing. Like, you know, that's one of those things, obviously, like, you know, hitting the ropes, you develop calluses, you get used to it. But like, what a weird thing that your body has to get used to, chopping another human being as hard as you can. You know, like, that's just something obviously Dan doesn't do regularly.
Right, right. And again, even at his age, Barbarian is still, you know, built like a barrel. I mean, he's still barrel chested and very strong. Two I thought of was, one would be, because it's so trendy, people do it to other people, is an RKO from Randy Orton. Or even a diamond cutter from Dallas Page would both be cool.
Both and, those would be cool.
And then I was thinking, I would want someone, you mentioned, you know, a submission hold, you can't trust someone. I would want someone who's a really safe worker. So someone who would do something very safely. And even today, I would a tombstone pile driver from The Undertaker.
Sure. That's a good one. Although, you know what? If it was The Undertaker, I think I'd have to choose The Last Ride.
Last Ride. Tombstone. Yeah, that would probably hurt, because Tombstone is more iconic, and he takes that on his knees. You know, you're not feeling anything off of that. And if we go all time, the Yokozuna, the bomb, the bonsai drop.
Oh, no way, no way.
No,
I've heard. I know what you're gonna say.
Yes, I've heard from Jim Cornette talks about it, and other people have talked about it. It was like having two feather pillows land on top of you.
And yes, I've heard that as well. It's not that I don't trust Yokozuna. I don't trust myself not to freak out and move, or like wrench my head up to the point where he like crushes me.
Yeah, that would be another thing, is like you yourself taking, because another one I thought of would be cool, but I wouldn't trust me taking it, would be a DDT from Jake Roberts.
So, yeah, I mean, he's talked about that, how, you know, he told people how to take it and take it safely, but there were people that didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and they would, like, get really injured. Like, who was it? Was it Steamboat?
I think that might have been the one they did on the concrete.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may have hurt him. And I've heard, if not with Jake, but I think it was some podcaster, I remember telling a story where they got in the ring with someone and took a DDT, and they were so excited that they jumped a little, and they went, because they jumped up, they kind of took it more on their head than they should have. So yeah, I would trust Jake to give it to me. I wouldn't trust myself to take it.
Exactly. And so, okay. So a lot of people use the choke slam, right? Who comes to your mind? Who would you want to take a choke slam from?
Well, Taker would come to mind. Kane would come to mind.
Kane would probably
Big Show.
Big Show. I tell you what, we talked about, you know, Last Ride, power bomb, choke slam. Mm-hmm. I don't want Sid Vicious doing anything to me.
No. I wouldn't trust Sid as a worker, or a person.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And like we've talked in the past about dangerous moves, like, you know, Kevin Nash's jackknife power bomb just looks like it could kill you depending on how you land.
Yeah. Well, anything that we talked about in that segment, like a vertebraker or a brain buster, anything where you're coming down on the top of your head, the back of your neck, anything like that,
that's the thing. So like, in terms of not trusting yourself, like the one move that immediately comes to mind when it comes to me not being able to trust myself to take it correctly is the Styles Clash. And
yeah,
because he has, not probably his fault, but there have been numerous incidents where like he's given people that move directly on their neck, you know, because they don't put their head the right way, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I could see myself absolutely screwing that up. Like, but you know, you don't want to be like, how'd you become a paraplegic? Styles Clash.
Yes. Yeah. I was goofing around with AJ Styles for something. Yeah.
All right. Well, let us know what moves you would want to take. I'm sure we missed something key.
Yeah. Somebody in a move that would go, yeah, that would be cool. And it's something that I could probably take and they would be safe with and all that.
Like you would think, you know, we haven't mentioned would probably be crucified. We haven't mentioned Hogan's leg drop or Stone Cold Stunner, you know.
Rock bottom, people's elbow.
Yeah,
People's Elbow is a good one because that's all show from him.
That's true. The thing with the stunner is this: it's all about your reaction or selling, rather.
How you sell it.
Yeah. There's some people that do it really, really well, and then there's other people that just are whatever. You don't remember it. So, yeah, it's kind of all up to you rather than him doing the move to you, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let us know what your choices would be. Check out our other video segment, Surgery, Random Match Reviews, What's That Card, our full-length episodes. How's it going, everybody? This is The Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling, and we are going to be giving you another edition of Stupid Questions, where one of us asks the other person a random wrestling question, and we have to answer right off the top of our head. The person fielding the question does not know what's coming. They do not have they do not have time to prepare, and that's what makes it fun. So this time, Leonard will be asking me the question. Leonard, take it.
You know, there are things like rock and roll fantasy camps and baseball fantasy camps. So if there was something, say, like a wrestling fantasy camp where you could go for 5 days and learn some of the business and work with somebody, who would you want to work with? Who would you want to try to train and learn from? And this kind of comes off the last question I asked you, which was what move would you want to take from what wrestler? So it kind of ties into that. But who would you want to maybe trust to train you in a fancy camp type situation?
That's interesting. So I suppose, like, maybe I'm putting too much thought into it, but I want to pick somebody that I like their move set would kind of look like a move set I would have if I were a wrestler. And I'd also want to pick somebody that is a hard worker, but not like a merciless taskmaster. So, you know, I think of people like FTR, or, you know, maybe AJ Styles, you know, I want to say Kurt Angle, but like he is an Olympian. So I imagine he might work me to the point where I pass out.
Yeah.
So those are the people that kind of come to mind. Now, if I'm thinking more old school, I suppose like an easy one would be like a Kurt Hennig. You know, he's obviously no longer with us, but in a fantasy world, I think that he would be a good person to learn from, and he'd be fun to learn from too, as he's a notorious ribber. So yeah, those are the ones that come to my head.
You know, a lot of what you said actually fits my pick, but that wasn't why I went with them, is because I was thinking, well, who are professional trainers?
I thought about that.
And I'm here in Ohio, as all of our listeners know, and Al Snow used to run a training school in Lima with D'Lo Brown. And what you said, moveset you could do, guys who, you know, wouldn't probably work you to the bone, that would want to have fun, that have training experience. So those were actually the first two guys I thought of, believe it or not. And if you want to go old school, I would want to go with someone like, say, Dominic DiNucci, who trained Shane Douglas and Mick Foley. So like Kilo Kowalski, who trained Perry Saturn and Triple H, among others.
Right.
Dory Funk Jr. had, you know, a very popular wrestling school. So those are the kind of guys I thought of. Then I thought of something else, a different track would be, I wouldn't necessarily want to learn the in-ring stuff, but the out-of-ring stuff, like to be an announcer, a commentator, a manager.
Oh, yeah.
How to book, how to like run a TV show. And the names I thought of there were Jim Cornette and Bruce Pritchard. Who have done all those
things. Pritchards, and one could teach you how to wrestle, and the other person could teach you.
Right. A fantasy camp with Tom and Bruce would be the best of both worlds.
Absolutely.
And I actually did think of Tom Pritchard at one point, then I forgot to mention him. And then a dark horse I'll give you on that front would be Scott D'Amore, who's running Impact right now. And actually, if Impact wanted to make some extra money, they could probably say, hey, come in, and we'll let you run Impact for a week.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned Fantasy Camp. I think it's called, I think EC3 is doing something similar to that with his Control Your Narrative.
Which, yeah.
They don't do shows, but I think they're doing some sort of camp.
And I have seen on some indie shows when they bring in somebody that they'll do like a training session earlier in the day, but it's usually for trained wrestlers. It's like you have to have so much experience to come to the little training session that they have. Similar that I remember from a show, I think this was up in Cleveland and we weren't able to go, but Stevie Richards was going to do DDP yoga with you.
Oh, wow.
Now, why Stevie Richards? I don't know, but.
You know, I could tell you some people that like I wouldn't want to learn from, and like it might surprise you, like being an AEW fan, like I don't know that I'd want to learn from John Moxley, because I feel like he'd want a blade right away.
Yeah, he would teach you how to bleed.
Or like the Young Bucks, because as much as I love watching their matches, I feel like they'd kick my head right off just because they could.
Yeah. Well, speaking of AEW, what about the Blackpool Combat Club guys?
Well, John Moxley is one of those.
Well, other than him, I was thinking Danielson and Regal and
Brian Danielson with them too, right? Claudio Castagnoli.
Yeah.
Either of those guys, I feel like would be very good trainers. Mm-hmm. Danielson obviously worked under Shawn Michaels. I forget who Claudio Castagnoli worked under, but I feel like both of those guys, those are guys that have been everywhere, right? So like they have seen everything just about, and I feel like they would be a well-rounded trainers, if you wanted to go that route.
Yeah.
Moxley? Eh.
When you said not, and remember I said people have training experience, I would not want Bill DeMott.
So yeah, he came to mind right away, but I was like, when he did come to my head, I was like, yeah, I don't know that I want to learn from him.
No.
Or what was the WCW guy? Sarge? Is that what they call
him? Oh yeah, Buddy Lee Parker, who did all the power plant guys. And they all, well, most of them sucked.
Yeah. That's true. You could have been the next Goldberg though.
Yeah, or Sean Stasiak.
Yeah.
Chuck Palumbo.
Who else has a school? The Dudley Boys have schools. Booker T has one.
Booker T would be cool, I think. And I think Stevie Ray helps him with that. A lot of guys have schools and academies. We're probably missing a lot who do. I think I told you how I met Dan Severn. And Severn, like you said, kind of with Angle, he would probably just run you ragged. Because when I asked Severn about doing a podcast, he said, well, I charge a lot, or I like to do something where I can come in and work with like a wrestling school or a wrestling team or a mixed martial arts gym or something like that. And then I'll do something where I'll work with you and you can get video of you basically getting your ass kicked by Dan Severn. So
yeah, see, he's like a Stu Hart.
Yeah. Yeah. He would
be a really nice guy, really unassuming voice, probably very gentle, but like get him in the octagon or the ring or the mat, whatever. And yeah, no.
Yeah. He would. Yeah. He was totally nice. Very soft-spoken. I was surprised. But the more I thought about, oh yeah, I think he would just purposely, stretch you.
Yeah.
Another guy I thought of, because I know he's done some work up in Canada with guys, is Ronnie Garvin. Cause I'm a huge Ronnie Garvin, Matt. Mark, and Garvin, I think, is very underrated in the ring. And I know he trained very old school, and he can stretch and he can shoot if he needs to.
That's a good deep cut right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting question to think about. It really, really is, because, some of the guys we mentioned aren't trainers. Some of them are. Ideally, we'd probably want to go with somebody who is a trainer. I know the Samoan. Yeah,
not everyone who can do can teach. I mean, you see so many former great football players and basketball players and baseball players who then go on to coach or manage and are awful. They know how to do it themselves, but they can't tell someone else how to do it.
Right. Yeah, and I know the Samoans had a school in PA at one point. Anyway, let us know what you think. Who would you want to train with? Who would you not want to train with? And let us know in the comments. How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling, and we are going to be giving you another edition of Stupid Questions, where one of us asks the other person a random wrestling question, and we have to answer right off the top of our head. The person fielding the question does not know what's coming. They do not have time to prepare, and that's what makes it fun. So this time, Leonard will be asking me the question. Leonard, take it.
You know, they are things like rock and roll fantasy camps and baseball fantasy camps. So if there was something, say, like a wrestling fantasy camp where you could go for 5 days and learn some of the business and work with somebody, who would you want to work with? Who would you want to try to train and learn from? And this kind of comes off the last question I asked you, which was what move would you want to take from what wrestler? So it kind of ties into that. But who would you want to maybe trust to train you in a fancy camp type situation?
That's interesting. So I suppose, like, maybe I'm putting too much thought into it, but I want to pick somebody that I like their move set would kind of look like a move set I would have if I were a wrestler. And I'd also want to pick somebody that is a hard worker, but not like a merciless taskmaster. So, you know, I think of people like FTR, or, you know, maybe AJ Styles, you know, I want to say Kurt Angle, but like he is an Olympian. So I imagine he might work me to the point where I pass out.
Yeah.
So those are the people that kind of come to mind. Now, if I'm thinking more old school, I suppose like an easy one would be like a Kurt Hennig. You know, he's obviously no longer with us, but in a fantasy world, I think that he would be a good person to learn from, and he'd be fun to learn from too, as he's a notorious ribber. So yeah, those are the ones that come to my head.
You know, a lot of what you said actually fits my pick, but that wasn't why I went with them, is because I was thinking, well, who are professional trainers?
I thought about that.
And I'm here in Ohio, as all of our listeners know, and Al Snow used to run a training school in Lima with D'Lo Brown. And what you said, moveset you could do, guys who, you know, wouldn't probably work you to the bone, that would want to have fun, that have training experience. So those were actually the first two guys I thought of, believe it or not. And if you want to go old school, I would want to go with someone like, say, Dominic DiNucci, who trained Shane Douglas and Mick Foley. So what about Kilo Kowalski, who trained Perry Saturn and Triple H, among others.
Right.
Dory Funk Jr. had, you know, a very popular wrestling school. So those are the kind of guys I thought of. Then I thought of something else, a different track would be, I wouldn't necessarily want to learn the in-ring stuff, but the out-of-ring stuff, like to be an announcer, a commentator, a manager, how to book, how to like run a TV show. And the names I thought of there were Jim Cornette and Bruce Pritchard. Who have done all those things.
Pritchards, and one could teach you how to wrestle, and the other person could teach you.
Right. A fantasy camp with Tom and Bruce would be the best of both worlds.
Absolutely.
And I actually did think of Tom Pritchard at one point, then I forgot to mention him. And then a dark horse I'll give you on that front would be Scott D'Amore, who's running Impact right now. And actually, if Impact wanted to make some extra money, they could probably say, hey, come in, and we'll let you run Impact for a week.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned Fantasy Camp. I think it's called, I think EC3 is doing something similar to that with his Control Your Narrative.
Which, yeah.
They don't do shows, but I think they're doing some sort of camp.
And I have seen on some indie shows when they bring in somebody that they'll do like a training session earlier in the day, but it's usually for trained wrestlers. It's like you have to have so much experience to come to the little training session that they have. Similar that I remember from a show, I think this was up in Cleveland and we weren't able to go, but Stevie Richards was going to do DDP yoga with you.
Oh, wow.
Why Stevie Richards? I don't know, but.
You know, I could tell you some people that like I wouldn't want to learn from. And like it might surprise you, like being an AEW fan, like I don't know that I'd want to learn from John Moxley because I feel like he'd want a blade right away.
Yeah, he would teach you how to bleed.
Or like the Young Bucks, because as much as I love watching their matches, I feel like they'd kick my head right off just because they could.
Yeah. Well, speaking of AEW, what about the Blackpool Combat Club guys?
Well, John Moxley is one of those.
Well, other than him, I was thinking Danielson and Regal and
Brian Danielson with them too, right? Claudio Castagnoli.
Yeah.
Either of those guys, honestly, either of those guys, I feel like would be very good trainers. Mm-hmm. Danielson obviously worked under Shawn Michaels. I forget who Claudio Castagnoli worked under, but I feel like both of those guys, those are guys that have been everywhere, right? So, like, they have seen everything just about, and I feel like they would be a well-rounded trainers, if you wanted to go that route.
Yeah.
Moxley? Eh.
When you said not, and remember I said people have training experience, I would not want Bill DeMott.
So yeah, he came to mind right away, but I was like, when he did come to my head, I was like, yeah, I don't know that I want to learn from him.
No.
Or what was the WCW guy? Sarge? Is that what they call?
Oh yeah, Buddy Lee Parker, who did all the power plant guys, and they all, well, most of them sucked.
Yeah, that's true. You could have been the next Goldberg though.
Yeah, or Sean Stasiak.
Yeah.
Chuck Palumbo.
Who else has a school? The Dudley Boys have schools. Booker T has one.
Booker T would be cool, I think. And I think Stevie Ray helps him with that. A lot of guys have schools and academies. We're probably missing a lot who do. I think I told you how I met Dan Severn. And Severn, like you said, kind of with Angle, he would probably just run you ragged. Because when I asked Severn about doing a podcast, he said, well, I charge a lot, or I like to do something where I can come in and work with like a wrestling school or a wrestling team or a mixed martial arts gym or something like that. And then I'll do something where I'll work with you and you can get video of you basically getting your ass kicked by Dan Severn. So
yeah, see, he's like a Stu Hart.
Yeah. Yeah. He would
be a really nice guy, really unassuming voice, you know, probably very gentle, but like get him in the octagon or the ring or the mat, whatever. And yeah, no.
Yeah. He would. Yeah. He was totally nice. Very soft-spoken. I was surprised. But the more I thought about, oh yeah, I think he would just purposely, stretch you.
Yeah.
Another guy I thought of, because I know he's done some work up in Canada with guys, is Ronnie Garvin. Cause I'm a huge Ronnie Garvin, Matt. Mark, and Garvin, I think, is very underrated in the ring. And I know he trained very old school, and he can stretch and he can shoot if he needs to.
That's a good deep cut right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting question to think about. It really, really mm-hmm. is, because, some of the guys we mentioned aren't trainers. Some of them are. Ideally, we'd probably want to go with somebody who is a trainer. I know the Samoan. Yeah,
not everyone who can do can teach. I mean, you see so many former great football players and basketball players and baseball players who then go on to coach or manage and are awful. They know how to do it themselves, but they can't tell someone else how to do it.
Right. Yeah, and I know the Samoans had a school in PA at one point. Anyway, let us know what you think. Who would you want to train with? Who would you not want to train with? And let us know in the comments, and check out our other episodes, Segment Surgery, Random Match Reviews. We're available wherever you listen to podcasts, and please hit the like button on our YouTube videos, subscribe to our content, give us a 5-star review if you think you've earned it, if we have earned it. And for Leonard, my name is Chad, and we will see you next time.